Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, hello, we're back again. It's Wiki Shuffle. Hiya.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, you've got howdy. I'm going with hiya. So, we're back again, and Owen Hughes from Failed Critics is still with us because we chanted on and we thought, oh, we'll do a bit more of this. And
fritzled me. I couldn't get out.
He's shackled to the recording desk.
It turns out all three of you are the fritzels.
I'm Philip Sharman. This is Jack Stewart.
Hello.
This is Chris Wallace.
Hello.
And this is Owen Hughes from off of out of failedcritics.com.
Hello.
And oh, I've got something.
You got something?
Yeah, I've got not really news, but remember on the podcast months ago when we had a listener say that I have a smooth, sexy voice? That's Owen's wife.
That was my
wife. Nice little reference there. How is she?
She's banned from listening to this.
That's a wise move.
I had to. It was ruining our sex life.
I just thought we would have enhanced it, if anything.
Yeah, that's when she said, Jack. I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is over.
Jack has ruined a lot of sex lives.
It's funny because it's true.
So for the second part, we're going to be doing some wiki shuffling with Owen as our guest. And we've got one more article that he's brought along that we're going to do first. So strap in, because we're going to do bonus episode 60 of Wiki Shuffle. This is your final pick that you've brought with you today. What was your motivation for choosing this article?
I thought it would be funny to see if you guys could try and make any sense of the plot to the film The Terror by Roger Corman from 1963. Now, I've seen this film a few times. I really love Roger Corman. He's a film director and producer. In the 60s, he made a lot of Edgar Allan Poe adaptations with Vincent Price. I think that's where most people know him from.
Right.
And I'm a big fan of Vincent Price. This film doesn't star Vincent Price. This is just a mess of... I mean, I've seen it twice. I have no idea what the plot is. I've read through this Wikipedia page two or three times. I have no idea what the plot is. So I'm looking forward to seeing if you guys can work it out.
Okay. That's what we do. We're like detectives of the podcast world.
So this is the 1963 film The Terror, which is a good name. And you feel like a lot of films would like to be called The Terror, but they can't be because this film already exists.
Did it first.
That's it. It's done.
Whoa, that list of directors.
Yes.
Like the sub-directors.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Owen's the only person around the desk who's seen this film.
Yeah, I've not seen this.
The Terror, 1963, is a low-budget American horror film produced and directed by Roger Corman about a French soldier who finds a mysterious woman who turns out to be a ghost. I think it seems really...
Oh, so simple.
Seems really straightforward, Owen. I think maybe you're just not very bright.
Yeah, that could be it.
Just pay a bit more attention.
It's too highbrow for me, this film.
Yeah. It is famous for being filmed on sets left over from other AIP productions, including The Haunted Palace. The movie was also released as Lady of the Shadows, The Castle of Terror, and The Haunting. Now, you can't take both of those titles out of commission, can you? You've already got The Terror, so nobody else can call a film The Terror. You also want The Haunting. Not okay.
There is
The Haunting.
The Haunted,
there's two. There was a remake as well, wasn't there?
Is that the one with Catherine Zeta-Jones?
No.
What am I thinking of?
Darling Buds of May.
That was the House on Haunted Hill.
No, she was it wasn't.
The Haunted Liam Neeson. Hair of 6 feet Under.
Yeah.
Can't remember her name.
Is it Liam Neeson? I'm definitely thinking of a film. Carry on with your podcast. I'm going to find out what I'm on about.
Okay, you find out what you're thinking about. The movie is sometimes... You're right there, Chris. You just get on with, get on with your research.
No one's ever said to me, you find out what you're thinking about and we'll get on with it.
The movie is sometimes linked to Corman's series of Poe films, which were made between 1960 and 1964 based on the public domain works of Edgar Allan Poe. But The Terror is not actually based on any text by Poe.
If it's based on any text at all, I will be surprised.
Set in 1806, the film tells the story of a lost French soldier. Chris, is there an update there?
Have you
found out what you're thinking about?
There is a film from 1999 called The Haunting with Liam Neeson.
Right.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right. It's a big film.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Once again, Chris has proved he's not an idiot.
Once.
Set in 1806, the film tells the story of a lost French soldier in the Confederation of the Rhine named André Duvalier, played by Jack Nicholson, who is saved by a strange young woman named Helene, played by Sandra Knight. She looks like Ilsa, the wife of the Baron, played by Boris Karloff, who died 20 years before.
So far, so simple.
Seems straightforward. Yeah. Investigating who the woman really is, André stumbles upon a hidden secret of the Baron. After he found Ilsa sleeping with another man named Eric, the Baron killed the two of them, or so he explains. All of the while, the phantom of Ilsa remained under the control of a peasant witch, who has commanded the ghost to torment the Baron for the previous 2 years. Over the course of the film, Ilsa's ghost beseeches the Baron to kill himself so they could be together. After much hesitation, the Baron decides to do so, perhaps to atone for his crimes.
So right there, that's where you can cut it off and that's your plot.
Yeah,
that's, you don't need any more. You can make that into a sort of 80-minute film, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it carries on and adds more complex layers that just convolute everything.
During the climactic scenes, André, as well as the Baron's butler, Stefan, try to stop him, eventually forcing the witch into compliance. Here it is revealed that the witch Katrina is in fact the mother of Eric.
Oh, Christ. Okay.
Who was allegedly killed by the Baron 20 years before, and that is why she has tried to make him commit suicide and damn his soul to hell. In a stunning revelation, Stefan reveals that Eric never died, that it was the Baron who was killed. Eric then took the Baron's place, living his life until he deluded himself into thinking he was the Baron.
What was that American soap that we talked about in episode 57? General Hospital.
General Hospital.
Is like that. So Roger Corman, and it was also sub-directed by Francis Ford Coppola and Jack Nicholson. And this is what they've come up with.
And more.
What's that thing about too many cooks?
It doesn't even have the limitations of the physical world that General Hospital has to abide by.
Mm-hmm.
Anything goes.
And they really play really hard with, like, General Hospital about things that are real world.
Didn't they shoot off into space or something at the end? Wasn't that what happened in General Hospital?
You know what? I believe you.
Probably.
Yeah, or aliens or something.
I had a... This is a little bit off topic, but I think it's a story worth telling. I had a lecture from one of the guys who was instrumental... When I was at university studying script writing in the early 2000s, I had a lecture from a chap who was instrumental in bringing EastEnders to the screen in 1984. So he was one of the initial writers and script developers, and he was a really interesting guy and got lots of good stuff to say about how they were trying to make this thing effectively from scratch. So he set up EastEnders, you know, gave it his all, turned it into what was a very serious, very far removed from any sort of soap opera thing that had come before. Mm. So a couple of years after he'd done that, he got a phone call from the National Broadcasting Service in the former USSR state of Georgia. And they said, well, what we'd really like, we've seen EastEnders, we like it, can you come out here and can you set us up with an EastEnders of our own? And I'm like, yeah, it sounds fun, let's go to Georgia. Let's go to Georgia and see if we can't do this. They could not, absolutely could not, when making this programme, not make it supernatural. He'd gone there on the specific brief that we're going to make this realistic, real-life soap opera that will speak to the people of Georgia and they will understand it. But what the writers wanted to do was turn everything into magic and witches and legend and folklore. And they just, the concept was just beyond them because you're storytelling. Why would you not have witches in it?
Yeah. Or maybe there's just a lot of ghosts in Georgia.
Maybe that's it. Anyway, back to whatever the blooming heck is going on in The Terror. I'm almost tempted to reread the last paragraph because I don't understand a word of it. During the climactic scenes, Andre, as well as the Baron's butler, Stefan, try to stop him, eventually forcing the witch into compliance. Here it is revealed that the witch Katrina is in fact the mother of Eric, who was allegedly killed by the Baron 20 years before, and that is why she has tried to make him commit suicide and damn his soul to hell. In a stunning revelation, Stefan reveals that Eric never died, that it was the Baron who was killed. Eric then took the Baron's place, living his life until he deluded himself into thinking he was the Baron.
Is it making any more sense second time through?
Not really, no.
Not at all.
Nope.
Katrina, realizing her folly only too late, goes with the two men to stop Eric from flooding the castle crypt and killing himself. However, she is unable to go into the mausoleum and ends up being struck by lightning and burning to death on the ground as she tries to escape.
Unfortunate.
In the climax of the film, Ilsa's ghost attempts to kill Eric while the crypt floods, and Stefan joins the struggle. However, by the time Andre gains access to the crypt, it is already flooding and crumbling, and he is able to carry only Helene's body away. The film ends as the two share a touching moment together outside before Helene begins to rapidly turn into a rotting corpse.
Hold on. Who's Helene?
Exactly.
Who's Helene?
Right, Helene Sandra. Is the woman who saved Jack Nicholson.
But she looks like the wife of the Baron, which is Boris Karloff's wife. But she's dead 20 years before. But Boris Karloff isn't the Baron, he's Eric.
Who didn't die.
He just thought he was the Baron. That's about as much sense as I can make out of it. Somewhere in there, Dick Miller does something to somebody.
Is it a good film?
It's not a good film at all. It is just an awful film.
My love. My love.
I am here.
I am weary, Ilsa. My soul cries out for relief.
There is but one way, Victor.
No. The holy covenants of God forbid it.
You will be forgiven.
I could be sure.
Take your life as you took mine. Let your own hand destroy you and bring us together forever. Forever. No more torment, Victor. Forever. Forever.
It's one of those where, because they left off the copyright thing at the end of the credits, it's just free.
It's on YouTube.
It's on the Wikipedia page. You can watch it on there. I don't know if I should recommend anybody.
No, it's fine. Chris is our, like, cultural canary. So, Chris.
Okay.
You go
right
for
down
it.
In the mines.
Right down in the mines, where Phil used to work back in the day. Yeah. You watch it.
I'll watch it.
Report back.
Yeah, that's fine. Yep. I'll do that. Something fun for me to do. I get all the fun jobs.
I don't know if it's fun. But I've watched it a few times. It just doesn't make sense. You can even read the description as you're going along watching the film. Still no clue who's on whose side, who's doing what. Nothing gets explained. But I've also seen The Haunted Palace, so the sets are almost identical. So it's weird, the two films completely nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, that's what it says. Corman decided to make the movie to take advantage of the sets left over from The Raven. He paid Leo Gordon $1,600 to write a script and made a deal with Boris Karloff to be available for 3 days filming for a small amount of money, plus a deferred payment of $15,000 that would be paid if the film ever earned more than $150,000. Boris Karloff later recalled, "Corman had the sketchiest outline of a story. I read it and begged him not to do it." He said, "That's all right, Boris, I know what I'm going to do. I want you for 2 days on this. I was in every shot, of course. Sometimes I was just walking through and then I would change my jacket and walk back. He nearly killed me on the last day. He had me in a tank of cold water for about 2 hours. After he got me in the can, he suspended operations and went off and directed 2 or 3 operations to get the money, I suppose. The sets were so magnificent as they were being pulled down around our ears. Roger was dashing around with me and a camera 2 steps ahead of the wreckers. It was very funny." It does sound like fun.
Hmm. It's exactly how almost all of their films were made, I think. Just very cheaply, very quickly. Yeah, the idea of them running around 2 steps ahead of the wreckers is probably not much of an exaggeration either. But I love Boris Karloff. What a great sort of iconic actor he was. But even he can't really save this very much.
Karloff's scenes were shot in 3 days by Corman. Corman then sent Francis Ford Coppola to Big Sur for 3 days to shoot additional footage. He ended up staying 11 days. Monty Hellman, Jack Hill and Jack Nicholson also directed some scenes. Leftover sets from other AIP films were used when shooting the film, notably those from The Haunted Palace, a Vincent Price horror film made earlier in the same year. The uniform worn by Jack Nicholson was used by Marlon Brando in Desiree. In the early 1990s, actor Dick Miller, who plays Karloff's major domo, was hired to shoot scenes to use as a framing sequence for an overseas version of The Terror. Under this scheme, the main action of the film is presented in flashback. This was done for Corman to establish some copyright in the movie. Dick Miller says the payment for these scenes was the most he had ever received from Corman. So 30 years later, yeah, they reshot an opening
to make it into a flashback. Yeah, the whole film then plays it as a flashback.
Great, because it needs a bit more complication ladling on top. In May 1966, Corman told Karloff he would not be getting his deferred $15,000 since the film never made $150,000. I don't feel surprised about that.
Nope.
However, he said he would pay the money if Karloff worked on a new undetermined future project for Corman. This turned out to be the 1968 Peter Bogdanovich movie Targets, which extensively used clips from The Terror. What? So we were going to do some random shuffles with Owen, but because it's a special episode and format be damned, we'll do whatever the hell we want because we're in charge. And Jack in particular, after our little conversation about the television of Georgia during that last article, has brought our attention to a little nugget also from Georgia that we think might make an interesting article. So we're going to talk about that instead. And that is the Samsonadzes. The Samsonadzes is a Georgian animated television sitcom created and produced by Shalva Ramishvili. Did you do this just because I'd have to pronounce Georgian names? Yep. Is that what you were thinking?
And it's Ramishvili.
It first aired in Georgia in November 2009. It almost immediately became a hit.
It almost immediately became a hit.
Taking Georgia by storm.
Also in inverted commas.
And shooting to the number two spot among the most popular shows on one of Georgia's main TV channels. It has been described as bearing more than a passing resemblance to the United States animated television sitcom The Simpsons.
I've just Google imaged.
Yeah, it's definitely more than a
passing resemblance. Have you seen any of these?
Yeah, I've watched almost a full episode on YouTube.
And how was it?
It's insane. Armogigen Samsonadze episodes.
Your standard Georgian family.
Yeah.
They're all quite broad in the beam, is the phrase that my grandmother would use.
Yeah.
Large-bottomed family.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's what they go for in Georgia.
You just know that grandma's big floppy boobs are going to be a part of a joke that runs through the whole season as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Just looking at that.
The Samsonadzes are a yellow-skinned cartoon family consisting of a dopey husband. Who works in a bank, so shut up, copyright people, he works in a bank. And his lavishly coiffed wife, who live in a made-up city with their children, Sharina and Gia. They also have a parrot, Koki. Their home city has been noted for its apparent resemblance to Tbilisi. So they've got yellow skin. The Simpsons don't own the colour yellow.
And I don't think that's what Tbilisi looks like.
Ramishvili has stated that the series aims to be relevant to Georgian reality and touch on social issues that will resonate with the Georgian audience.
I didn't get that impression.
Well, that's because you're not Georgian, so it's not going to resonate with you.
Maybe if you. Can you tell us a fact about Georgia? Is there anything you know about Georgia?
I think the bad guy in GoldenEye, played by Famke Janssen, I think she's from Georgia.
Maybe, I can't confirm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Put me on the spot.
Yeah, but does that give us any indication as to the life of a typical Georgian family?
No, you wanted a fact, gave you a fact. You thought you were trying to be funny.
I wasn't.
I did an excellent job there.
What facts have you got,
Hang
Jack?
On, hang on.
Right back at you. And
who's she played by?
Quickly checking her out. Please be from Georgia. She's from the Netherlands. No, that's wrong.
But the character might be from Georgia.
Yeah, just because it doesn't mean Famke Janssen. Who's, yeah, she's
who's
not
sorry?
From
who's the what's the actress?
Oh, where have I got this from?
F-A-M-K-E.
I hope I'm right because he's so annoying. Yes, she is.
Okay. But what does that prove?
It proves that I got a fact about Georgia.
But about Georgian life.
What's yours then?
I haven't got one, but that's, I didn't make any statements that it doesn't sound
so
like
So I can tell
life.
You, as a fact, the character, Xenia Onatopp, was from Georgia. That's my fact for you. Take it.
Owen, I don't know if you noticed when listening to the podcast just how aggressive it gets inside this room sometimes.
It's heated.
We try to tone it down in the edit, but the reality is one day these two are going to hurt each other.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be a big fight, I can tell. Yeah.
It's been bubbling for years.
Yeah, I like the layout, though. I mean, you're both opposite ends of the table with a big like microphone stand in the way, so...
One day we'll destroy this.
It'll be like intentionally devised.
Phil is just in the wrong place, though. He's just in the corner, rather than like by the exit.
Many
entrance.
People... Kills the air. Many people have said to us, if it wasn't for Phil... we would already both be dead.
Ramesh Veeley has stated that the series aims to be relevant to Georgian reality and touch on social issues that will resonate with a Georgian audience, while its chief scriptwriter, Zviad Biladze, explained, "We just took an average family and made a parody of the common traits, like laziness or love of alcohol." The series has attracted some attention for featuring Russian leaders in a negative light in a context of tense Georgia-Russia relations. Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin appears in one episode, sending a spy into Georgia. Ramesh Veeley describes this criticism of the Russian government as simply our civil liberty and duty. The Independent, however, has remarked that there are no plans to introduce the controversial Georgian president, Mikhail Saakashvili, into the programme, and Russia Today has noted that the series creators make lots of fun of Russian politicians while forgiving their own.
So I would encourage anyone that's listening to this to delete this podcast immediately, and, well, maybe not, but go onto YouTube and Google... What am I on about? I'm talking like a grandmother. Go onto YouTube and Google The Simpsons, The Simpsons Georgia. Google the YouTubes for Simpsons Georgia. You can just put Simpsons Georgia in and that will show you some clips of this.
These episode titles on Wikipedia are just hilarious. Yes.
Can we each... So if we take a moment, read through all the episode titles, I would like to know everybody's favourite episode titles. So there's 18
Can we not just
here.
Read them all out? Because they're so good.
Number two is good.
Number two is incredible. Phil, please read out all of the episode titles.
I'm going to go for 11.
How to create a Samsonadzis.
How to create a Samsonadzis. Zadzi. At least that makes sense grammatically.
Work on bank for one money.
Just the one.
Please get me away, cow. Battle for movie. Keto and Kote.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued.
You're the evil. Double Gila. Dodo's Vacation. That's Evil Team. Gila Town's First Land of Santa's Surprise. Evil Samson Adzebi's Family. Is that one really racist?
It might be.
They're all Russian.
Yeah.
So there's an evil version of the Samson Adzis and they happen to be...
the Samson Adzebi's.
Yeah. Is that kind of an Arabic name?
It sounds like it.
Oh, that makes me feel uncomfortable. The next one's called Simpsons on My Family.
And they claim that it's not the Simpsons.
Most Money in Family. Most Power on Family. Dictatoring Ice.
Dictatoring Ice.
The only way to deal with ice.
Yeah. Hot Lava Land and Evil Dodo's Girlfriend.
There's a lot of evil going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, do you mean it's just a social commentary on deep political troubles in Georgia, or are they just being very, very racist?
I'd love to see these episodes.
I think I would love to see them for the first minute.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I'd probably
yeah,
regret.
It's like, did you see the American pilot for Peep Show that they did?
It wasn't even
did they do
the same format, was it? It was just people in a flat. It was awful.
It was awful.
Oh, dear.
I know, it was fun for the first minute or two, and then it just made me want to cry.
So we're going to do one more article with our esteemed guest, Owen Hughes.
Esteemed. Nobody's ever described me as esteemed before.
Well, that's our gift. That's our gift from us to you for taking the trip here to join us at WikiShuffle HQ today. Our last article we're going to look at is Fubbing. P-H-U-B-B-I-N-G.
Have you been fubbing again, Chris?
It sounds dirty, doesn't it?
Have you been fubbing behind the bike sheds again?
I'm sorry, I was fubbing. All the kids do it.
They don't.
They do. Everyone's fubbing these days.
Well,
fubbing here, fubbing there.
Good job there's a stop fubbing campaign.
I don't like the sound of this. Straight away, this article has multiple issues, is the first line. A major contributor to this article appears to have close connection with its subject.
Ah, the fubber.
Or maybe the fubby, you don't know yet.
No, I feel really bad for the fubby.
Oh,
things have gone wrong for them.
This article contains weasel words, vague phrasing that often accompanies biased or unverifiable information. And this article may document a neologism in such a manner as to promote it.
What does that mean?
A neologism is just a new term, like texting. It's not a neologism anymore.
No.
But it was.
Okay, no, I've got you.
Fubbing is a term coined as part of a campaign by Macquarie Dictionary to describe the habit of snubbing someone in favour of a mobile phone.
Oh, like Jack all the time.
What? Right, I'm reading the article on...
So it's on your phone?
I'm not. I'm looking at the football scores.
So this is phone snubbing. This is a portmanteau.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know words. Of phone and snubbing. In May 2012, the advertising agency behind the campaign, McCann Melbourne, invited a number of lexicographers, authors and poets to coin a neologism to describe the behaviour. The term has appeared in media around the world and was popularised by the Stop Fubbing campaign created by McCann. What?
Do they need a campaign to stop that?
So somebody decided that an appropriate use of their time and resources was to start a campaign to stop people from snubbing people by using their mobile phones, needed a new term, and then have presumably spent money on this.
It would be the person selling the dictionary, presumably. McCann Melbourne. There's money to be made in selling dictionaries, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, maybe there was in 1859. I'm just not sure that's true anymore. Mm. The Stop Fubbing campaign site and related Facebook page was part of an elaborate public relations effort designed to promote the Macquarie Dictionary of Australia. In the media, the website was originally credited to an Australian college student named Alex Haig, who had been interning at McCann and was subsequently hired. A film titled A Word Is Born describes the entire process and serves as an ad for the dictionary. Okay, so it's part of a wider... How has a dictionary company got a promotional budget?
I don't know what goes on in the world anymore, Phil.
Fubbing in the media. The campaign was picked up by numerous media outlets because they're just desperate for content and they will take any old shit you throw at them. Oh, look, it's got press release on the top of the page. Better run with it. Sorry, Owen, am I slandering your industry there?
It's not my industry yet.
The campaign was picked up by numerous media outlets, notably those in the United Kingdom, Mexico and Germany. The press reported on surveys showing statistics of the number of people fubbing and published etiquette guides. Oh, it's the worst kind of journalism that there is. It's just non-stories, just... Ugh. So, yeah, stop fubbing, everybody. And please, please, whatever you do, don't help the word fubbing become a thing.
I don't think it did.
Like, talking about it on the podcast.
Oh, no, we're doing it now.
Are we perpetuating this nonsense?
Stop talking about the fubbing.
Yeah, stop saying fubbing.
Stop saying fubbing.
Nobody.
I didn't say fubbing.
You were fubbing.
I was not fubbing.
I've used it in the content. Shit.
How it begins. I'm going to fub one out right now.
That was episode 60. You can't deny it. It actually happened. Hmm. We've got evidence. I'd like to thank Jack and Chris.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks.
No, thank you.
Our pleasure.
and most importantly, for making the journey to Wikishuffle HQ and recording both of these specials with us. Thank you very much to Owen Hughes.
That's okay. Thanks for inviting me and providing such a delicious lunch.
It's a banquet. You've provided a banquet.
Yeah, we put on lunch for
it
our guests.
It is a banquet. Marks and Spencer's is very posh.
We do. We've got a whole lineup of guests arranged for 2016, so we've got our next two already organised. We're not telling you who they are yet. You just have to keep on listening.
Can we give them a clue?
Yeah, go on.
Brad Pitt.
They've both been on podcasts.
Yes.
One is a human man. One is a human woman.
Ah, clues.
And one of them likes cross-stitching.
Maybe
both.
Maybe both. You don't know that they're both playing. That's a big clue.
It is a big clue.
Well, it's quite a big clue if you know who it is.
We don't know who it is.
Anyone got anything else they wanted to talk about before we disappear?
No. Nah.
Owen, remind us again where to find Fail Critics.
We've got all of our podcasts on the website, failcritics.com. I don't think I mentioned it on the other episode, but we are also on the Twitters and the Facebooks. Just Failed Critics on there. Or you can find me personally, ohughes86 on Twitter. But I'm not on the Instagrams, I'm afraid. So I haven't been able to follow Jack on there yet.
Duke Stevens, the best Instagram in the world.
Unfortunately, I'm just really not that into pictures of coffee.
So I don't take pictures. I take pictures of nice things.
Nice coffees.
Supposed to do. This is what Phil said on
that's the exact comment that I made.
But
in response
if you follow
to
the right people, then it's nice.
Right, we're off down the pub now.
Yay.
Let's go do that. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you again on Tuesday where normal service will resume. Thank you and bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.